So this morning, my talk is probably going to be a two-parter. So I'll just warn you right in advance. I don't think I'm going to get all of it done, but we'll give it a try. And oh, you can't see it.
He says.
Hey. So before I start, I want to beg forgiveness from this memory of William Shakespeare and for literature teachers everywhere as I butcher this quote and move it to my own configuration. To give or not to give, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous complacency, or to take arms against a sea of requests and by fulfilling, end them. Aye, there's the rub, for they never end. The requests for assistance never end. From your own personal standpoint, the stuff you get in the mail, people on the street, people who come to the congregation, the requests never end. They never end because need never ends. Poverty never ends. The poor will be here always, Jesus told us. Need never ends. Greed never ends. People wanting to take advantages never end. So those requests will never end. So we will constantly have to decide for ourselves as people and in the congregation to give or not to give. So obviously my topic is giving. Or perhaps maybe it's more using what has been given, because all the things we have been given to us by God. So we'll see where that goes. What prompts me, of course, is my own personal situation. Lisa and her family is richly blessed through all the years. Worked 35 years for the same company. Have food without measure at will. Never go hungry except by my own decision. Got a home, family, all this stuff God has blessed me with. Very richly. Cared for me my whole life. And so I feel kind of an obligation that then I have to give back. I have to share that with those who don't have that, who are haven't, or are in trouble, or having difficult times. So I have a personal obligation to give and to share with those. Also, I am one of the deacons in this church, so there's an obligation upon me for that as well, and I feel that obligation deeply. As a deacon, it is more than just counting the money and recording the talks and changing the light bulbs that go out and fielding your concerns about the heating and air conditioning situations. So I feel like an obligation deeply. You give your money into this congregation, into the collection, for various reasons. You give it because God has told you to, but you give it with the expectation it's going to be used for various things. And you all have different ideas on how that money should be used. As leaders in the church, we also have different ideas on how that money should be used. And of course, it's only natural that it should happen that way, because we're different people, we're different ages, we have different backgrounds, different experiences, different filters on life. We have different ideas on how that money should be used. And sometimes we come into conflict on how that money should be used. And when you do that, obviously, where do you go? You have to go to the scriptures and say, what do the scriptures say about how this stuff should be used? So, but backing up just a little bit, in Matthew 25, you have the parable of the watchful servants. There's a warning that's given there, I think, to all of us. Much will be required from everyone to whom much has been given. And honestly, everybody in here, much has been given to all of you. However little or a lot you think you have, much has been given to us. So from a personal standpoint, there's accountability here. But even more will be demanded from the one to whom much has been entrusted. I see that as part of this congregational responsibility that we have as deacons and leaders in the church. We're entrusted with the money you're giving. We're entrusted with the elders are entrusted with accountability for your spiritual well-being. So it's a double obligation on us in the church. And we feel it very greatly. So how should we look at this? This morning, I'm going to be talking about two different parables. So one of them is very, very familiar to you. You know it very well. The other one is a little less familiar, and that's the one I'm going to use as the driving parable to talk about. These two parables They seem to be the same, yet they're slightly different. There are some different details in them. One has more information than the other one. One has some expanded scope, not talking just about perhaps giving or the usage of giving of gifts given. But in the end, hopefully, we'll come to the realization that there's the same core concept, but they're not the same parable. They look like the same parable on the surface, but they're not the same parable. So we'll take a look at that. So we have these two parables. Of course, first one is the parable of the talents. Very, very familiar. Everybody in here could probably just quote me the whole thing without even thinking about it and knowing all of the details. So I want to just give you some context about these parables. So in Matthew, before he gives the parable of talents, he's in Jerusalem now. Okay, it's right before the Passover. He's in the temple. He's come to Jerusalem. He's in the temple, and he's teaching, and he's talking about various things, and he's talking about various parables. He's giving various parables as he goes. Of course, the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the scribes are there. They're questioning him. They're trying to trip him up. They need to say something that will alienate him from the crowd or something that's going to just really get him in a lot of trouble, but of course, they can't do that. So there are several situations where the Pharisees are meeting and coming back and questioning him in the temple, but he refused them on all accounts, and eventually they come to the conclusion, this man has to go. We have to kill this man because we cannot publicly refute him, so we're going to have to get rid of him. That's the only way we can solve this situation. So after that, he leaves the temple. He goes out to the Mount of Olives. His disciples come and meet him there, and they say, can you explain some of that, what you were talking about? Because we didn't get a lot of it. So he again gives them more teachings and talks about more stuff, and then he gives them two parables as well. And these are the last two parables we find in Matthew, and I believe they're the last two parables that we get in the Scriptures. There's the parable of the 10 bridesmaids or the 10 virgins with the oil in their lamps. Very good application of you must be prepared. And then the parable of the talents. You must be prepared, and while you're here, there's this blessings you have. How do you use them? And so he gives that parable. The next parable is in Luke. And it's the parable of the 10 minas or the coins or the pounds. It has lots of different names. If you look at the different translations of the Scriptures, the parable of the talents has very similar language through most of the translations. But the parable of the 10 minas has a lot of different wording if you look at it. Some of the translations are vastly different from each other. It's kind of interesting that they're that way. But we're going to call it the parable of the 10 minas because I like that. And it happens prior to Jesus coming. He's on his way to Jerusalem. He hasn't got there yet. And he's going through Jericho. He meets Zacchaeus. We have the story of Zacchaeus, and he stays with him. And then he gives this parable of the 10 minas. And he says, because. And it's interesting that in the talents, he's just giving general teachings of what's going on. But here, there's something that prompts this one parable. It says, because they were near Jerusalem, and because the people thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. So they said, all right, finally, his disciples say, Jesus, he's on his way to Jerusalem, declare himself king, we're going to throw off the yoke of the Romans, and we're going to be our own people, so the kingdom of God is coming right now. And he says, no, that's not what's going to happen. So he gives them these parables. You know, he always teaches them parables to give context around the point. He could tell them simply what's going to happen, or give them a direct comment, but he gives them parables to kind of place it in context so they understand a little bit better what exactly he means. Okay, you said this, but what do you really mean by that? So he talks in these parables, not as riddles so much as to give context about the concept he's trying to present to them. So, this did occur. Make sure my stuff's up there. Did occur before the talents, because he's on his way there. So if in Matthew 20, before the parable of talents, it talks about him went out from Jericho, so that aligns with being in Luke there. In Luke 19:48, after he does this, he said, and he was teaching daily in the temple. So the timeline all fits in there very well together. And then Matthew 24 and Luke 21, the wording is almost identical as you go through those two different things. So it is the same teachings, and it's the same timeline. So Luke introduces this concept about using what you've been given, and Matthew kind of confirms and expands upon that in the talents. All right, so we're going to talk about those. So we're going to go through the parable of the 10 minas, and I will refer back to the talents just because it's just so well known. You probably all have that. So I have it up here, and this is the New International Version. Again, if you have a different version, it may be a lot different. I was going to try and show it to you right there like that, but I thought that was really ugly, so I may have to go back because that's the talents one. I want to make sure I have the right stuff there. So this is the one we're going to go through. So let's read. 19:11. While they were listening to this, and what this is he was talking about how he's come to save the lost. And while they were listening to this, he went on to tell them a parable. Because he was near Jerusalem, and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. Okay, so no, that's not the case. Here's a parable to explain that. He said, a man of noble birth. In some translations, it says a prince. I like that. It wasn't a new one. I like that, because who's the king? Who's the prince, the man who will be king after him? A man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. Does that sound familiar? In the parable of the talents, he's just a man or a businessman who goes off to a far country. That's all it says. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back. Very specific instruction, a command. Put this money to work. Some of the translations, they say, trade with this money or do business with this money. But the idea is the idea of work. Putting it to work. Do something with it. So if you look in, of course, there's 10 servants. In the parable of the talent, there's only 3. And just as a side, a talent is a lot of money. Okay? If you look at it the way they've... A talent is like 3,000 shekels. Well, mina is a very small, it's a coin, it's a very small amount of money. It's 1/60th of a talent. It's like 50 shekels. So it's very small. So a talent is a whole lot of money. A mina is a very small amount of money. And they said that, from the commentaries, I said that a mina was like a month's wages. So that means a talent would be 4 years worth of wages. So that's a lot of money over there, just a small amount of money here. So you're going to see some differences here, and we'll, hopefully I can get and explain those a little bit later, if I get to that far today. So a lot of money in the talents, just a little bit of money in the minas. But put this to work. In the parable of the talents, they don't say that. I like it said, it's specifically said here to put this money to work. In the talents, it's implied because the very first servant, what's he do? It says he goes and he puts the money to work. So it's implied that you're supposed to put that money to work until I come back. But his subjects hated him and sent the delegation after him to say, we don't want this man to be our king. Does this sound familiar? A prince going off to be crowned king, to come back, to rule in his kingdom. There are those who don't want that to happen and who are actively working against that to happen. Wow, that really aligns with what he's talking about here. He was made king, however, and there's no stopping that, and he returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it. So two very important things here. Put this money to work, expectation of gain from it. Expectation of gain. If you work, you expect to get paid for it, you expect to get a return on that. Expectation of gain. The first one came and said, sir, your mina has earned 10 more. So this is 1,000% increase. That's great. So if you look in the talents, he had 5 talents, right? Which was a huge amount of money. He gained 5 more. That was 100% increase. This is a better increase, but relatively speaking, that was a lot more money back there. So again, hopefully we'll talk about that later. Well done, my good servant, his master replied. Because you've been trustworthy in this very small matter, I gave you some money and said, here, go do something with this. Go put this to work. Because I gave you a very small instruction and you were faithful in doing that, take charge of 10 cities. Well, that's great. That's a great reward. These are rabbit holes I say I go down because when I see these things, I start thinking about a whole bunch of other things that are kind of off the main topic here. Now he's in charge of 10 cities. Wow. So what does he have? He has wealth. Maybe he has a palace, maybe he has a house in each city. He's got servants now of his own that reply to him. He's probably got food and all this kind of stuff. But what else does he have? He's got responsibility. He's got accountability. He's got 10 cities he has to rule. People coming to him and he has to pass judgment on them. They're probably coming with all these little petty arguments and stuff and he has to decide who's right and who's wrong, stuff like that. Yes, he has reward for this, but with that reward comes additional responsibility. Additional accountability. I don't know what that means, but it's not just, ooh, great, you got something good. Now you have accountability for that. The second one came and said, sir, your mina has earned 5 more. 500% increase. Still very good. He says the same thing. The master answered, you take charge of 5 cities. Not quite as much return, not quite as much responsibility, accountability. In the talents, he had five, earned five more. All he says is, good job. He says, because you were trustworthy in a very small matter, then I will make you master in a large matter. Let me see what it says. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. So it's the same concept again. You take charge of five cities, not as much. Then we get to the last servant. So, talent had three servants. There are ten here, but only three are addressed. It says, then another servant came and said, sir, here is your mina. I have kept it laid away in a piece of cloth. So he wrapped it in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you, because you are a hard man. You take out what you did not put in, and reap what you did not sow. So what happened here? This man was afraid. What was he afraid of? Well, he's afraid that somebody would break in and steal the mina from him, so he hid it in a piece of cloth somewhere. Afraid as he was going out trying to earn money with it, put it to work, that maybe he would get mugged and somebody would steal it, or maybe he would lose it along the way. Perhaps he would invest it and he would lose money, and he was told to gain with it, so he was afraid of that. So he said, oh, I'm going to keep this here. So when you come back, I will give you what you gave me. That seems reasonable. See, here it is. I kept it safe. It's yours, just like you gave it to me. What's the problem with that? So he wasn't told to do that. He was told to go out and put it to work and gain something with it. He didn't do what he was told. Here's another rabbit hole that I usually go down. He said, because you are a hard man, you take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow. So if this is an analogy with Jesus as this prince, this nobleman, is Jesus a hard master? It kind of sounds like he's saying, you get things that you didn't get an effort in, right? You reap what you didn't sow. You didn't do the work, but yet you get the gain from that. Is that Jesus? Does he get things that he doesn't deserve, what he doesn't work for? It doesn't sound right. So there's two ways you can look at this. One is that, yes, it is an accurate description, and then you're going to have to try and justify that in your own mind. I guess Jesus gives stuff to us. We go out, we do the sowing, and then Jesus gets the gain, God gets the gain for those souls, but we did the work because we were out doing it. Maybe you can rationalize it like that. I think there's another way of looking at that, and that is, this is his perception. His perception. The servant perceives his master to be this way. Not that he is this way, but that's what he thinks. And so he's going, whoa, this guy's hard. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to keep this safe here, because if I mess this up, I am in big trouble. So his master replies, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man, taking out what I did not put in and reaping what I did not sow? He doesn't say this as a statement. He makes this as a question. I think that's really important. I think that goes to the second part where, no, it's not true, but it's his perception. He's saying, well, so you thought that, did you? You thought that about me? Well, if you thought that about me, then why didn't you act on it, right? I told you to put this to work. You didn't do it. You thought I was a hard man who was going to hold you accountable, but it still didn't do anything. You didn't drive your actions. You say this is your belief, but it didn't drive your actions. You did nothing. I like in the talents, because the talents is very similar. He says the same thing. He says, you wicked and lazy servant. And he's a wicked servant because he didn't do what he was told. He's lazy because he couldn't even take it. I'm ahead of myself. Why then didn't you put my money on deposit so when I came back I could have collected it with interest? You lazy servant, you couldn't even walk down the street and hand that to somebody else and say, here, hold this until I come back and then I can get the interest on it. How little effort does it take to do that? But you couldn't even do that. You're wicked and you're lazy. So you'll be held accountable for that. Then he said to those standing by, take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. So remember what happened to the talent? He took his money away and gave it to the one who had his talent and gave it to the one who had 5 talent. But what did he do after that? He said, and cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There were weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's quite a difference in consequences. That's what I'm trying to say. In this one, he just said, heck, take it away and give it to somebody else. And that's all that happens to him. In the other one, it was taken away, and then he was thrown into the outer darkness. So he was cast into the pit of hell, I guess you could say. And here the people are objecting, and they're saying, sir, this guy, he already has 10 minas. He doesn't need another one. And he said, he replied, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. For everyone who has been faithful to me and has done what I commanded, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, even what they have will be taken away from them. If you don't do anything, even if you think you have nothing, it will be taken from you. But those enemies, this is interesting. Okay, so is he a hard man? Was he a hard master? What does he say? But those enemies of mine who did not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me. Well, that's pretty harsh, don't you think? That's pretty harsh. But what's the analogy? Those people who work against Christ, what's going to happen to them? We know what's going to happen to them. They're going to be cast into the outer darkness. So now here's kind of a comparison of these two parables. All right. So are they the same parable? Are they not? Do they have the same core message or not? So in Matthew, it's on the Mount of Olives. Luke is in Jericho. Matthew talks specifically about the usage of resources and nothing else. Luke talks about that. Plus, there's this messianic revelation of Jesus going off and coming back and being king and rewarding those who are faithful and punishing those who are not. Matthew talks about a certain man, and Luke is a prince or a nobleman. In Matthew, there's no indication of any ill feeling by the servants or by the people toward the man. In Luke, we have this hatred. They don't want him to be king. Three servants in Matthew, 10 in Luke, but only three are referenced, and they have the same, they compare up very well. In Matthew, there was a large amount given, 8 talents, which is it's a lifetime's worth of work. So in the commentaries I've read, it say he had distributed all of his wealth, which would kind of go with the amount of money we're talking about. In Luke, there was only a small amount given, 10 minas. It wasn't very much money involved in being passed out. In Matthew, they had different amounts given, 5, 2, and 1. Luke, 1 each. Matthew, they each got the same return, right? 5 got 5, 2 got 2. In Luke, they had differing amounts of returns, 1,000%, 500%. In Matthew, there was no distinctions of the rewards that were returned for this. He said, you were faithful in a little bit, I'll give you a lot. In Luke, different rewards, 5 cities, 10 cities. In Matthew, there was severe punishment, cast into outer darkness. In Luke, his mina was taken away from him. In Matthew, there was different degrees of advantage with the same rewards. I don't remember what I meant by that. I'm sorry. Same degree of opportunity with different results. Okay. All right, so they each had different amounts of money. One had more than the other, but their reward was the same. In Luke, each had the same opportunity, but they got different results from that. So is it the same parable? Well, if you look at it, Matthew's really talking about the usage of resources, what God has given us, how we use that, and the return we get on that for God. And if we're told we need to do that, and if we don't, what do we get? Cast into outer darkness? We're disobedient. And the punishment for disobedience is you will not go into heaven. In Luke, you have this mina. I think this mina means something else. It's not about money. They all had the same thing, the same opportunity. It was a small thing. I think this mina represents salvation. Salvation is not a small thing, but it's given to everybody. It's given to everybody, this gift of salvation, and what do you do with it? Do you go and you share that? Do you invest in that? And if you don't, if you hide it away, if you hide your salvation, if you hide your Christianity, people don't see it. You wrap it in a cloth in your house, or you bury it in the ground, and nobody sees it, and you do nothing with it, then what happens in the end? That salvation, that opportunity is taken from you. And what's your punishment? It's the same as the guy in the talents. Cast into outer darkness. It's the same thing. So it is the same, but it's different. The same, but different. That's where I arrived at the end. You guys can decide for yourself. I think the Message is clear. Obey God. He's given you gifts. Use them. He's given you the gift of life. Share it. If you don't, there's punishment for that. The second part of my talk, we're going to talk more specifically about, I guess it's about being a deacon, and the usage of some of our resources. So, I won't have time for that because there's a lot more after this. I'm going to close now, leave you with those thoughts. I'll give you the gospel invitation, I think. Yes. Give you the gospel invitation. You got to start with having the gift of life. You do that by confessing Jesus as your Savior, being baptized, going out and doing the work. So, we'll offer that opportunity as we stand and sing.